Skill constellation.
A bridge across the valley of despair.
A zipline over hardship.
A Sherpa for the second summit.
All this and a good deal more after the break. Welcome back, all you beautiful people. Today we're talking about skill constellation. As always, I'm Nick. That's Eric. We're the Get Good Guys.
And this is the Get Good Guide. A fine good morning to you.
And to you, sir.
On this bright April day. We are talking about the skill constellation, which is does not necessarily appear in the guide. This is a kind of a different approach to moving past good if you are so dead set on trying to gain a little bit more capacity in an area where you're kind of already good.
Sure. Or, you know, maybe it's required for the work you do.
Yep.
Or, you know, or goals you may have. And we're not against that. We're not against that at all.
Yeah.
As long as we're doing it efficiently,
that's right.
We're all for it.
Yeah.
We're all for it. In the guide, we often talk about narrowing our view to help with that efficiency and acquisition of skills. But we're going to look at kind of the opposite of that today.
Yeah, kind of the wider picture around a skill. And so the general conceit here is to think about a skill that you are good at. Right. Maybe you've gone through the Get Good Guide and you've kind of gotten to that 80% mark. You're at the top of the first summit. And you realize, okay, this is fine, but there is some aspect, there's some reason that I want to move past good. And I acknowledge that that's costly. I acknowledge that that's inefficient and may even put me solidly in the valley of despair.
Yeah, or maybe it's something you're already good at. Maybe it's something you do for work. Maybe you're already deep in that valley of despair and looking for possibly a way out.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so this is kind of a very specific tactic, right? It has almost nothing to do with the actual skill that you're trying to get better at.
That's the idea, anyway.
Yeah, right. So so rather than continuing to pound your head against that that wall or to kind of slog through the valley of despair, we want to step back and take a look at the constellation of skills that are around the skill that you're, you know, pushing on.
Yeah, that'll ultimately make you better at that thing without having to work on the pieces of that you already are challenged with.
Right, right. And so the example is, okay, you've got two certified public accountants sitting next to each other. They're both equally good at certified public accounting. And I'm not sure how you measure that, but I'm sure there are tests and things like that.
Everyone knows this.
Everyone knows this. Very common example. And one of them is really great at communication and the other one is not. And one of them is really kind around the office, and the other is not. And one of them is sort of a really positive team member and knows specifically, you know, specific things about their coworkers that they can say and be positive, and the other doesn't care. Right? Like, which one are you hiring?
Yeah, for sure.
Bear in mind, they're both equally good at certified public accounting.
Yeah. Yeah, the one with all those separate skills is definitely going to be much more marketable, much more hireable, and create a much better atmosphere for everyone else, which is going to be helpful.
Yeah, and then ostensibly you get sort of a virtuous cycle where people around that CPA, you know, who has the ancillary skills, that constellation of skills, you know, so that's one way to think about the skill constellation.
For sure.
Another is a little bit even more direct. Where, okay, these are skills that have little or nothing to do with the get good skill or the good to great skill.
Right.
But they will directly contribute to your capacity.
Yeah. Should we go through some examples?
Yeah, we had a few examples that we worked up.
Let's look at physical therapy was one it came across here.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this actually came up. My oldest sister is a physical therapist and studied at Columbia. It's no big deal. but she had a couple of skill constellation skills that made her, when she started practicing, immediately stand out. Immediately. Like, to the point where I was little, like I was young, and I remember people talking about her.
Interesting.
As a practicing PT. One of them was that she was an English major in undergraduate. And so her charts, her writing, her ability to communicate in written form was like head and shoulders above anyone else.
Well, and especially if if the the client or the patient is looking at those charts mm-hmm. and trying to understand what's going on, we talk a lot about jargon on the podcast and in the guide, being able to dissect that or put it in words that are understandable for someone who's maybe not as knowledgeable about that thing can feel really nice for that patient or client.
Yeah. Well, and I remember too, other professionals, other PTs or physicians or whomever else might be working with that patient that you're working with is more adept at their work because your communication is so much stronger.
Well, and maybe just even more willing to work with you because they don't have to call you and ask you what you're asking, or write you back. They can just, it's much more streamlined and more effective time-wise. Kind of similar realm to this. Being able to speak well is very, very helpful in these kind of things. Communicate what you're thinking, what you have going on in your mind to someone else is really, really important, even if what you're trying to say is not complicated.
Right. Yeah, and especially being able to do it in a way that is succinct and understandable, even if the patient doesn't know the field.
For sure.
Right. If you start using technical terms like dorsiflexing and you know things that a non-PT or a person who doesn't have a CSCS or something would have no concept of, then that's not a particularly helpful method of communication.
For sure.
So those communication skills. But then there are some of these like soft skills that are you don't always think of as learnable, but absolutely are.
Yeah.
One of them is empathy. Right. That putting yourself in the position and being able to put yourself in the mindset of someone you're working with is especially important for a profession like physical therapy. But it's also important for a lot of professions, right? There are a lot of professions that can really benefit from actively trying to increase your capacity for empathy.
Well, and there's not a ton of professions where you're not interacting with anyone.
Right.
Right. Even if it's another, like a coworker, it can be super helpful to be able to have some of this empathy and kind of use that to relate and to guide your actions with that other person.
Yeah. Yeah. And then kind of the last thing that we had just brainstormed was the ability to be funny.
Yeah.
You know, and that doesn't mean you're trying to crack everybody up. You're not a stand-up comedian. You're there to do a job. But a few quips or phrases or having a couple of turns of phrase in your pocket that you trot out.
Well, and as someone who's been through, I've been through quite a bit of physical therapy in my life. I've been through athletics my entire life and my share of injuries and such. Not everyone who's there is excited to be there. Hardly anyone, for that matter. They're usually there because they've had an injury or for some other reason. And even if they're not minding what they're working on, they're not excited why they have to work on it.
Right.
And these kind of things, this kind of quote-unquote bedside manner a little bit, can really, really help that process along and help that person be more positive and see what they're doing and you in a much more positive light.
Right. Which in turn, right, contributes to their capacity to recover and contributes then to your skill as a practitioner.
Yeah, your skill, your business, your ratings or what have you, your reviews,
whatever it
all
might
that
be.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really, really helpful.
Now, when we talk about these things, some of them seem like or might be assumed to be inherent, right? That they're character traits instead of skills.
Sure.
So people will often think of empathy as a character trait, but it is not, right? It is a learnable skill, just as public speaking is a learnable skill.
Sure.
You know, very few people are born with brilliant public speaking capacity.
Right.
You know, being funny is not inherent. There are plenty of people who are professional comedians who are like, I am not inherently funny. I work at it. And so these skills can be learned. We chose this example because it's not something we talk about a lot, but we had some athletic examples up. Maybe we'll hit those on the Patreon and talk about that a little bit more and kind of how to visualize the constellation. But you've got essentially two kinds of skills that can fall into that constellation. One is that it directly affects your primary skill, your central skill.
So if I may just quickly, so if we're talking about physical therapy, right, that might be increasing your knowledge of biomechanics, right? Or staying maybe up to date on new physical therapy kind of exercises or whatever that might be.
Or
that
like 3D modeling.
Correct.
Right?
That would be a very, very better, you know, manual manipulation. That would be a very like direct skill set.
Right. And then the less direct, but still absolutely impacting your skill set are these other sort of ancillary skills that are a little bit maybe further out in the constellation, but they still orbit that central skill. And a lot of those skills you'll find orbit a lot of central skills, right? So in other words, if I can do empathy training and really make that a deliberate skill, boy, I might find that that positively affects a lot of skills.
Well, and not to mention, it may, even though it's not, doesn't feel direct, it might be more important than some of those direct skills.
Sure.
You know, you may, the baseline of what you already have might be more than enough for 90% of your clients. And being able to be funny and have them enjoy their time with you might really do so much more good than you having a little better understanding of their biomechanics.
Right. Right. Yeah. If I give you, let's go back to the CPA example, right? Now I've got two PTs, two physical therapists standing next to each other. One, they're both equally good at physical therapy and providing physical therapy. And one, I like being around.
There you go.
Well, chances are I'm going to be far more compliant, more likely to do my exercises, more likely to show up for my appointments. And that's ultimately a crucial aspect of being a physical therapist.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, my friends. Well, I think we are up against time. And so we will have quite a few more examples over in the Patreon. We invite you to join us over there for a further discussion about skill constellation. And in the meantime, we will see you in the outro. Well, gee, thanks, everybody. Sure do appreciate you joining us here on this, well, for us, bright blue April morning. This has been a discussion about skill constellation, and that discussion will continue over at the Patreon, patreon.com/getgoodguide. As always, you can check out the center of the Get Good Galaxy over at getgood.guide. Download a copy, printable or otherwise, of the Get Good Guide and get going. As always, I'm Eric. That's Nick. We're the Get Good Guys.
And this is the Get Good Guide.
A fine good morning to you.
And to you on this Everest-type day.
Yeah. Let's start again.
I was going to go for a different mountain joke, and then I started thinking about yours.